Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is an absolutely epic podcast with a dog owner that really, really, really is struggling with a dog that has a bite history and also really reactive and working with another trainer, and she doesn't know, how do I find the right trainer for a reactive dog? Beautiful podcast, absolutely lovely. As you guys know, or maybe you don't know, next month, December 7th and 8th, I believe, 2024 at my Upstate Canine Academy, I'm going to be live doing a seminar working with eight dogs with eight different issues. Come learn, come be part of the community network, learn some things from some new people. It's going to be a lot of fun. Whole weekend's great. As always, you guys seen on my YouTube channel. Can't wait to see you guys, meet you guys, hang out with you guys. And all of my courses are $100 off using the discount code YouTube. All the information that I just blabbed about is in the link in the description. Enjoy this podcast. Love you guys. Thanks. Bye.
So I have a Husky Shepherd mix. He's three. I got him as a rescue, and he's aggressive, but it seems like he's only aggressive in the house, but I'm not 100% sure. I didn't have any idea that he was aggressive when we brought him in. He failed his intake at the, you know, like the rescue center.
Yep.
For aggression. So they figured he was aggressive. And then we had him neutered, and he had one tiff with a 6-month-old Dutch Shepherd, but my girl dog was there, and both of them weren't neutered at the time. Like, the Dutch wasn't neutered, and my dog wasn't neutered. And so then he was neutered after that. And that's the only time he's been aggressive towards dogs that I've seen. And then, but anytime we have somebody come in the house, he goes ballistic. I was trying to travel for Thanksgiving, and so I was trying to get a sitter. And so I was telling her, I want to get him really acclimated to you. So we did a meet and greet. The trainers at the rescue center said, you know, do a walk outside with him, mm-hmm. and then bring somebody into the house. So we met at a park. He loved her. The second time we met outside, came, you know, did the walk, and then came inside. He loved her. And then at one point he was in his crate for he's on meds for his anxiety. If it is anxiety, I don't know. And so I said, well, why don't you go ahead and give it to him? Well, he went ballistic on her with the rushing at the crate. And then
so everybody
calmed down.
He was in the crate, and then she tried to come over to give him like meds, yeah. or something.
Yeah, like peanut butter bread. His meds are in peanut butter bread, so it's a big treat. And so then after that, everybody calmed down, and we went back outside when he was fine. And again, he was fine. He was happy. We were sitting in my living room after that, and I went over to talk to her. We were on separate sides. He's always tied to a 6-foot lead. To the couch. And so when I walked across the room to show her something on my phone, he did his massive charge and tried to get her. He couldn't reach her because of the lead, but if he had been able to, he would have bitten. He's gotten another friend of my son's. He's gotten his hand. He's nipped his hand.
Okay.
So I had a trainer come over, and he assessed, he said he wanted to assess his aggression. And so he brought in a beginner sleeve and just kind of walked it towards him, and then walked it back and walked it towards him. And so I couldn't intervene. He said, just let him react. And I'm sorry, cord for my phone. Sorry. And so that was terrifying. I've never seen him not be stopped. And so that was really awful. That trainer said that it's probably genetic. He said he has some sort of clicking jaw like a Malinois. I don't know.
What did he do when he went towards him with the bite sleeve? Like what did he
didn't have the sleeve on. He just literally had it like in front of him and then put it towards my dog and then walked and then came back. So just kind of
And what did he do?
Putting pressure on him. He rushed as far as he could, growled, barked, did the whole I'm gonna eat you thing. He kind of varied, I think, because like at one point he laid down and then when the guy came back with the sleeve, he snapped at it, but he didn't get up and rush again. He did it for a really, felt like a really, really long time. Coda, you know, got back up sometimes and then kind of got disinterested sometimes, but every time it came towards him, he reacted.
Did he bite the sleeve?
Yes, but not like a more like a nip. He never like so latched just, onto it and
right. That's good. Okay. So what is your goal?
I would really like to be able to have people in the house. I would really like to be able to travel to see family. Mm-hmm. So that is an extension of being able to have somebody in the house, having somebody that he would not react like that to. And I'd like to not put him down. I'm feeling like everybody's telling me that, you know, he can't be saved and I don't like that.
Well, I think there has to be context on that. Like to be saved to what extent? Because, you know, like here's the thing is your expectation and your goal is to get him to a point where he can be around other people and be neutral and not react, right? Mm-hmm. But if he wasn't around other people, he'd be completely fine because he's good with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So saved awesome. is there's context there. Saved in context of I want him to behave like this, and if he doesn't, then we will put him down, right? But if you changed your expectation, changed your roadmap, or even rehomed him to somebody who really could care less if he was neutral around other people. So I'm just clarifying, you know, the saving part is again subjective to the context in which your goals are, not necessarily is this dog capable of being successful because he can 100% be successful. It's just the context and expectations in which you want him to be, he may not be. So keep that in mind because I think dog owners get overwhelmed and people give them all this information of you should put him down and he can't be saved. And it's like, well, that's context because there's plenty of dog people out there that when people come over, they put their dog away and that's it, done, right? There's plenty of boarding facilities. I don't know about in your area, but there are no contact boarding facilities everywhere in the country for the most part. You drop your dog off, they open a guillotine, the dog goes out, whatever.
So that's actually one of my questions. Would that make him more aggressive because it's going to reinforce?
So here's the thing is when you go as far as here, okay. So I'm going to give you like the big macro zooming all the way out here and looking at the scenario as a professional and you as a dog owner and your dog is if the question is, if euthanasia is on the table, I don't think you should care whatsoever if he doesn't like going to the boarding facility when you want to go and enjoy holiday. I don't think that should even cross your mind of like, well, it might make him, it might be get pissed off. You know, it's like,
right.
Okay.
Well, I do not want euthanasia on the table. So that's the pressure that I'm getting from family.
No, I know. I'm just zooming out and I'm being objective here and looking at the situation. And when you, so we have thresholds. I have thresholds anyway. Okay, I'll put it that way. I have thresholds. So anybody that mentions euthanasia of the animal not living anymore, that's the most extreme threshold you could possibly get of this is the worst case scenario possible. Okay?
Yeah.
So then when you come into factor, like once you introduce that threshold into the conversation, the narrative, the expectations, the roadmap, everything changes because that is in the conversation. So with that being said, you have to realize when the question comes about, well, okay, and again, I'm looking at this as an equation. If I have a dog that I can't have a, let's say, a traditional dog walker come over and let the dog out or stay with the dog, which would be ideal. But let's say we can't because the dog is reactive or scary. Then the alternative would be drop the dog off to a no-contact boarding facility while you can go and enjoy the holidays, and then your dog doesn't die. And you can pick your dog up when you get home, and you go home and you live your life, right? So we'll unpack this a little bit, but I'm just saying, you know, I want you to look at this in a situation of, who cares if your dog's stressed about going to a no contact boarding facility when the other alternative is not breathing anymore?
Right. But my perception on it is either I don't travel because he would be too stressed out, or he would go to a boarding facility. Like that's my perspective of like, I just never go
for sure.
My family kind of thing. So
yeah.
Cause I want to do the very, very best thing for him.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, yeah, and exactly. And here's the thing, right? Okay, this is a good point. I'm glad that you're going down this road because I get it. Like, I'm a dad of a two-year-old. So when he is kicking and screaming because he doesn't actually really do that, but maybe he's crying because he wants to stay up past his bedtime, I need to do what's good for him. I hate that he's crying. I would love for him to stay up and hang out, but he's a two-year-old that needs to go to bed early, right? So yeah. I have to basically ignore the fact that he's crying and say, hey, buddy, have a good night. Like, you're good, right? So my point is I completely understand what you're saying, but you have to, again, like the reason why I'm saying that for the context of what you're saying is, and again, I know that this isn't a make or break thing, but dropping your dog off to a no contact place and he's like, I'm going to be stressed here. And you're like, okay, well, the alternative is dying, so you can pick, right? So, and I know that it's not that extreme in your head where that's a flip where you're just going to say, okay, well, euthanasia. I'm just saying, I'm trying to level the playing field here for you as a dog owner to say, okay, there's going to be some things that there's going to be some decisions that you're going to have to make that he's not going to love. And you have to, so, you know, part of your life as a reactive dog owner, if you will, and we're going to get granular on the actual reactivity and what it is and all that stuff. But I'm just looking at this right now. The lowest hanging fruit is the biggest stressor in your life. The biggest stressor in your life right now, outside of the obvious of your dog being reactive and not being jumping into people's laps and licking their face, is that you can't find somebody to watch your dog while you travel and see your family, which of course I deal with it all the time. I have this 150 pound rock solid mastiff that doesn't know his own size, right? So I deal with it even myself. But my point is once you assert your decision making to say, you know what, I'm giving this dog a chance where even the shelter or the rescue group was hesitant. And yes, the pampered 5-star Ritz of somebody staying in our home is the best option. But hey, man, that's not a good fit for you. So I'm going to call around and I'm going to find a no contact or a boarding facility that can take you. And you're going to go there for a week. Tough cookies if you don't like it. I'm going to go enjoy my family and I'm going to come back and we're going to get back to work. And I think that's the mentality that you should have. And don't be so hard on yourself when you're trying to make the what's the good, better, best option. Like, if that's not going to work, if somebody's staying in your house, which again, I understand is obviously the easiest and most convenient. But when you have a dog, we have a dog at the facility named Hawk. He doesn't like new people, period. End of story. We have a place down the road. Actually, one of my old employees opened up a contactless kennel. And so he goes there. It's perfect. Would he rather be in his own home at the facility because he's a shop dog? Absolutely. But hey, tough cookies. My staff take time off for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So there's that. I just wanted to get that kind of like heaviness off your plate to understand, like, outweigh your options here of, well, do I stay home and be stressed out with this reactive dog and miss seeing my family? I don't think you have to do that. I think you can just find a place, and if he's uncomfortable and he's reactive, could it make it worse? Probably not. Because, which is what I'm going to get into next, you are the person that is going to ultimately make the decision on how this training is going to go and how this dog's life is going to go. And if you are burdened, period, and you are stressed about everything you have to do with your dog, or every family trip or work trip or whatever comes up, and you're kind of sweating about it, and you're like, man, this dog, then, you know, that's going to suck. But if you just kind of like process the idea of like, this is where you're going to go, I'll see you in a week, deal with it, dude. So, you know,
right.
But here's the thing. Okay. So here's the caveat to this is two things. There's a great chance the only reason why he's reactive is because of you. There's even a greater chance that he's going to be far less reactive to people when he's outside of your environment, period.
That's what I wonder.
I've seen that more times than I haven't. Like, way more times than I haven't.
Yeah.
So there's that, right? There's the idea of he could be happier with these people he doesn't know. Right. Because here's what happens, okay? Just to give you if you're thinking in your head, how does this happen? How do we get here? I'll tell you how. Okay. So dog owners who kind of, you know, rescue these dogs, right? Or adopt these dogs, there's this innate feel bad sympathy that we have, right? It's this kind of woe is me with the dog. And what ends up happening is we allow them to get away with too much, and we don't lay in the principles and the foundation as soon as we should. So then the dog starts to take advantage of us and then flip the script. So the dog goes, I'm kind of little orphan Annie. I've been given this shot. I love you. You love me. You're giving me way more attention, affection, and love than anybody else has in my entire life. I lived in a very, not so great situation, or maybe not consistent situation, kind of bounced around. These are how these rescue groups kind of work. And then boom, you enter the mix. There's no foundation or very little, or compared to what the dog needs, we'll say no foundation, right? You could say, well, I do some training. That's good. But maybe the dog needs more. And then all of a sudden the dog says, I love you more than anything. You rescued me from this environment, but I don't think you can handle situations. So, and then the confidence decreases, and then the dog becomes reactive towards people. The amount of times that I've had like the most reactive dog in the whole world coming at me to try to kill me, or what it looks like, and then I just take the dog and walk away and we're just fine, is more times than not. Like the more outwardly reactive the dogs are, the less inwardly reactive they actually are. Kind of like the loudest people are actually the most insecure about what they're actually fighting about. So there's that, right? So my point is you'd be very surprised if you just, you know, depending on the trainer or whatever, put a muzzle on the dog and said, here, just walk. And then somebody just walks away with them. You'd be very surprised, right? Because once we get you involved, once we put somebody in the house, especially in a crate, which I know it's like, well, we got a peanut butter sandwich, but we're in a crate. We're confined.
Right.
We're vulnerable. Not ideal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So so there's that, right? So you'd be surprised, actually. You drop your dog off to this place, and 2 days later, they email you and say he's having the time of his life. Everybody loves him, right? You'd be
right.
You'd be surprised.
And that would match his personality, but that's why, like, to have this trainer tell me, you know, the world is going to end.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this. Every single business out there in dog training is no different, is all different. Like, For an example, yeah. I just went to this one shop over here and they sold me this product and they said, yeah, everything's good. Everything looks good. And I bring it home and I'm messing with it. I'm like, oh, it seems kind of off. I call around a couple other shops. I go, bring it in. Let me check it out. And you immediately get there and you're like, holy crap, these guys are the real deal. And everything the other person said, I mean, that happened to me yesterday. So, but I can't tell you how many times that it's happened. And in so many different services, camera gear, water bottles, freaking framing, like literally anything. Like there's going to be levels, there's going to be experience, there's going to be differences. So I'm not saying that this person doesn't know what they're doing. I'm sure that they do. However, I just want you to understand it's not a, you know, it's not an end all be all. I'm you know, taking it with a grain of salt and being fair here. There are definitely people out there, 100%. I've seen it with my own eyes. Yeah, we've documented it a bunch of times where they just have no idea what they're doing. And the dog owners are like, you know, I just hired this professional, they're certified and they have 10 years of experience, but they are clueless. And it sounds crazy, but it happens every day. So right. So my point is this, is, okay, so I want to dive in a little bit deeper. So the fact that Coda is the dog's name?
Yeah.
The fact that Coda isn't, so there's levels of aggression, okay? Super, super levels of aggression. Again, there's a spectrum here. Let's just say spectrum. And the fact that Coda is defensively coming, nipping, walking away or running away or nipping and backing up is defense, which means get out of here. I don't want you here, but I don't want to attack you because I'm not confident enough or I don't really want to, right? Dogs have the ability to rip, shred, crack bones, kill. The fact that Coda's coming up and doing these little bites is this little like, I don't know what to do. So that's immediate fear. It's immediate lack of confidence. Okay. Now, genetics definitely play a role. But when we talk about genetic disposition with aggression, what I'm looking for would be genetic disposition to be actually aggressive. Like a dog, here's what I mean by that. Here's the spectrum. What I would consider dangerous, not that your dog can't hurt somebody, scare somebody, or isn't dangerous, but a seriously dangerous dog is a dog that you're sitting there petting and they're wagging their tail and then 2 seconds later, they bite your face. That's genetics. That's different from what you're dealing with. That is a malfunction almost, if you will. That is not okay. That is where behavioral euthanasia comes into place, right?
Okay.
Very rare. I think 3 times in my entire career have I suggested it, and I can remember one of them, and the other ones I can't, so I'm just being fair. So my point is the fact that Coda's coming out and just snapping and grabbing and nipping is just very, it's kind of like swinging on somebody, be like, I don't really want to hit you. I could, but I don't want to, you know?
Right.
So there, that's huge.
That's from super encouraging.
From a behavioral standpoint, you have to think that the dog is making a decision to say, I can latch on to you, grip, snap, growl, shred, do it again, pull me off, I'm a killer. I've seen it.
Right.
That's not what you're dealing with. Right. You're dealing with this little snappy flea bite, like get out of here. It pinches and it's uncomfortable, but we're not ripping, growling, snarling, hanging on. That's the type of dog that actually wants to kill something or is actually aggressive or is actually like, I'm pissed at you. Like I'm going to hurt you. Okay. You are more dealing with a defense. From what you've told me, we're dealing with more of the defensive, insecure, I don't really want you here, right? But it could also be protectiveness, right? So what leads me to believe that is the exact example you told me of the pet sitter. We're fine. We're okay. I get up. I get close to the pet sitter. Bang, the dog has a problem with that. So look at the variables. We're fine. We're fine. We're fine. We're fine. We're fine. What changed? You got close to her. He had a problem with that. Bingo. So the sky's blue. I mean, that's an easy equation to figure out for me anyway, from what you've told me. That it's not personal with her. So
right.
it, you know, and dog sitters, they just want, they don't want to watch one of these dogs. It's not, you know, it's like with vets, they don't like when veterinarians, yeah. they don't want to really handle these dogs because everyone else yeah. is so much easier. My point being is I would be super surprised and eager to know if you were completely out of the equation, how the dog would handle with even the same person. So do you have any questions on that?
No, I think that that's confirmation of what I wondered, because it is so specific. And my right. my boys swear he doesn't do it when I'm not here. So
bingo.
I don't know.
So you are the problem, and it's unintentional, right? When I say that, right. some dog owners get offended sometimes, but it's not. It's not an intent. It's not.
I've watched enough of your videos.
Yeah, yeah, you get it. It's like it's not intentional, obviously. So when I say that, it's not. It's not a stab at you. It's just you are the equation. You are the variable. Whatever yeah. you can call it, problem, yeah. variable, reason,
yeah.
no, whatever. You are the.
I'm the soft mama who's yeah. not doing what he needs.
Right. So, okay. So what to do from here? There's a fork in the road here. You want to be able to travel and you want to get a pet sitter, but you also, the reason why you can't do that is the other fork, which is, you need to reset and recalibrate your relationship with the dog. And then ultimately, because you not being able to travel because your dog is reactive is a symptom of the other side. That's once you handle one, it's kind of like a skeletal system. Like once you stretch this muscle, then your back stops hurting type thing. Like they're all connected, right? So once you handle the insecurity, the handling, kind of the setup of your relationship, then you will start to see much less reactivity and protectiveness and knowing that like mom's got it, right? But again, like I said earlier, the reason why these things typically happen is here's an angel saving me from this life, giving me the best life. Again, lack of foundation, not enough accountability, kind of just, like you said, letting you get away with stuff. That is the recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Here's what to do. What can we do?
Okay.
So the boarding and stuff aside, that's not a big deal. I think if you just call around and say, right. Hey, I got a kind of reactive dog. He's pretty good without me, to be honest. Bingo. Like go on vacation. Like your dog is going to be okay. I really wouldn't worry about that, because I know that you said, right. Well, it could make things worse, but when you're away from the dog, it'll actually get better. Right.
Right.
So, okay. So here's, does it make sense how you got here with the dog? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
100%. Poor okay. baby. Oh no.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
Smother him with love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I said in the beginning is, and I've said that before, some of the worst cases I've ever, and if you watch or hear anything that I do, that is some of the worst cases of dogs I have ever dealt with aggression ever. Yeah. We pulled them out of this bad environment and we just let them do what they want.
Yeah.
But it also creates really unruly dogs in general. They just don't have this aggression issues if we do the same thing, where if we get a dog at 8 weeks and we let them do whatever they want, and they have decent genetics, they just don't listen. It's still a nightmare. They pull you on the leash. They run away. It's terrible. But regardless, it creates a disaster. So, okay, here's what we can do. Lowest hanging fruit is the easiest thing, in other words, is to start off with reestablishing boundaries is the easiest thing. And what that means is essentially, like I said really quickly, the dog knows that he can walk all over you. Therefore, his trust in you, his confidence with you is low, and therefore he's protective of you. It's like walking out with your baby sister. That's a vulnerable human. I will protect them naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. There's no, you don't have to question it. Well, why? It's just, they're defenseless, right? Or like if I walked out with my 8-week-old baby right now, like I'm going to be more protective than I would, right?
Right.
It's just the dog goes, you are somebody I need to protect. Everything tells me that you are that person, right? So how do we reverse that? By setting boundaries. So kind of flipping the role a little bit by being Yes. So boundary setting, super easy to start. So the dog goes, I listen to you now. Where, in other words, or currently it would be, maybe you ask me to sit, I get a treat, but I'm right back up. And if you ask me to sit when there's things going on, I likely won't. If I want to do something, I'm going to go get it, even though you told me not to. And you just reset things, right? So we're not actually holding the dog accountable when we don't listen. We're just asking them to do it again. Does that sound like that's what you're doing, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. He has some, like you said, he's got some basic, you know, like if I say, oh, I train him, I don't, you know, like he can sit, like you said, if I say sit and I keep him sitting, but is he going to, you know, really do what I ask if he has another reason not to? No.
Right.
He's not.
So, you know, it's interesting over the years. It's like you go to a mechanic, you go to a doctor. These are things commonly people would refer to, and they hear what you're doing, they go, I already know what it is. Because they're like, how do you know? It's because I've seen it 10,000 times, right? So that's it. So my point is I hear these symptoms and I'm like, these are the things you're probably not doing, which is why I've created some of the courses I do. Because I'm like, okay, so boundary setting. So again, let's put it this way. This is fun, actually. It's fun because you're kind of reestablishing a healthier relationship with your dog instead of your dog becoming protective and reactive. And then it helps your dog become more obedient, which helps everybody. So I would start off with this. I mean, it's a long journey, but it's an easy journey, in my opinion. It's very easy principles. It just takes time. You put a dog into a sit, you have a leash on the dog. The leash holds your dog accountable. So in other words, code is sit, and you go to grab the door. The dog gets up because they're excited. So they immediately said, no, I don't listen to you. Two things happen. A lot of dog owners will just say, whatever, I'm in a rush, or I don't really care. That's a problem, because you just told your dog to do something, and under their circumstances, under their terms, they said, I'm done.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
So not only is it when you ask your dog to walk nicely on a leash or sit because you actually need them to, is it not going to work? But you're also damaging your relationship because you just told your dog to do. It'd be like kids, go to your room.
Oh yeah, I've got a teenager.
Bingo. Okay, do your homework, go to your room. You ask them to do something that's beneficial to them because you're like, you have to go to school, you have to, you know, things like this.
Yeah.
They do it for like literally 2 seconds and they're done. And you just, so here's what happens is you kind of like, oh, whatever, I'm busy or I'm working or I don't have time for this, whatever, life happens. Here's the problem is obviously during that moment, they don't do their homework because you were too tired or too busy to hold them accountable or enforce anything. But the bigger picture is they go, I can get away with stuff. Mom doesn't really care if she's tired or something, right? So exactly. That's what happens with dogs. But with dogs, because they're animals and because they kind of look at their, especially with any type of, you know, if you have husky or a shepherd in there, because I know you're shepherd husky mix, some dogs are more, again, have genetic disposition to be more protective. So then the dog goes, you're not in control, are you? I can walk all over you, right? Like I can get away with everything. That's where the dog starts to become protective. Things like this. So a lot of people are confused about how basic principles of holding dogs accountable can make your dog reactive or aggressive. That's why. So put your leash on a dog and you're just going to start doing what I call threshold exercises. A threshold is simply you're going to test the dog. They're going to want to do something and you're going to say, you can't. You got to listen to me. So it's just testing the dog, right? Creating, just kind of creating that muscle memory of like, you have to listen to me. But you also have to hold the dog accountable, because I just did a video on this actually that we're posting next week. It's the same thing. This is the easiest way to damage your dog. Your relationship is a lot of people. So sit, the dog puts their butt on the ground. We open the door, the dog gets up. Again, most people will just be like, whatever. So don't do that. But then what a lot of people do is they ask the dog to sit again. It's better than ignoring it completely. However, it doesn't correct the behavior that they messed up, right? It doesn't.
That's where I'm at.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't fix the problem. You ask them again. Okay. Boom. You ask them again. Boom. It's like, it's like asking a kid, here's $1,000,000. 1 + 1 = 3. 1 + 1 = 3. And you're like, if you don't explain to them, like, no, you're doing it wrong. Here's how to do it, right? If you just keep saying, do it again, they're like, I'm confident. It's like, this is what it's supposed to be, right?
Right.
So the moment that the dog rises up, you correct with your leash. Boom, just a little pop. It basically just disrupts what the dog is doing, right?
Okay.
They go back into a sit.
Okay.
And then you test it again. And the goal is for the dog to learn. That's why we correct. I want you to correct to learn. 1 + 1 = 2, not 3. Let's do it together, right? They go, oh, that's right. That makes sense.
Okay.
Right? Just easy equation. So Coda sit. He puts his butt on the ground. You grab the door. You open it. They stay in a sit. Yes, good sit. Boom. You pay the dog with food or verbal praise. And then you break the dog, which we're going to talk about break, which is huge. So the most important thing, no matter how you're doing this exercise, you can put a piece of food on the ground. You can put the dinner and the breakfast on the ground. You could do it with going through a doorway. You can do it with a down. You can do it with a stay while they're standing. You can do it with anything. But the goal is to test their obedience. And if you're missing the accountability piece, excuse me, then that's what's holding you back from the dog going, oh, you're serious, right? So does that make sense?
It does. Right now I have a slip collar lead. It's just the lead.
Yeah.
And so there's times where, you know, he kind of pulls. He's pretty good actually about like the correction. He responds better actually than my other dog. And but he's strong. And so I'm kind of wondering about, is that enough, or does it have to be something different? You know, like the prong collar or something.
Could be. The prong collar has many different uses and it comes into play in many different conversations, depending on where you're at with your dog. So yes, it could. Yeah, sure. But I would also mention, and for you to be mindful of, that your dog also has to know the behavior you're asking before you enforce it, typically.
Yeah.
So there's things that are never appropriate, jumping on people, dragging you down the road. But when we're talking about like just basic healing, basic sitting, yes, the slip's probably going to be fine. But then there's a conversation of, well, the slip works inside, but when there are squirrels, people, things like that, then yes, obviously, because that is, there's a ladder there. It's like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I have to hold my dog accountable in order for them. I mean, you could, it's kind of icky for me to say, but like hold your dog accountable so they respect you. But for me, it's more about trust you. Like I want them to trust you that actually you, when you say something, you mean it. And you, like I just put my dog in a down as I was cleaning my garage and the Amazon driver came and my wife pulled in and he was still sitting. He didn't want to, but he was in a down, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, he knows that when I tell him to do it, even though he doesn't want to, he's going to do it. And that's huge because so again, it's when I say something, they're going to follow through with it. And it's the same thing for you. Right now, I always tell people, if you have the most aggressive man eater in the world, but you have good obedience, you can have a children's party at your house because you tell your dog to down and stay and you have 100 kids over there and they're not going to move. So you don't have either. Right. You don't have good obedience and your dog is reactive. So you have to you can go up that ladder. You can get a prong collar. Absolutely. There's especially with a big husky shepherd mix, has a big thick coat. The slip is not going to be as, you're not going to, I call it like, you don't have a good as a pulse. You can't feel your dog as much. Absolutely. The prong collar could help. But regardless of that, whatever tool you use, you just have to make sure that it's helpful. And the way to really gauge that is your dog has to care about it. So you say, Coda sit, Coda does not sit. You pop on the slip and your dog looks at you and yawns. Okay, we should use a prong collar then because I need you to like actually care about what I'm saying, right? It'd be like telling your kid, your teenager, I need you home at 9 unless no TV. And they're like, psh. And you're like, okay, I need you home at 9 unless no TikTok. They're like, okay, I'll be home at 8:55. Okay, right?
Right.
It has to matter. Like, it really has to matter. Yeah. And with dogs, they're such physical animals that that's how they communicate. So that's why we use physicality instead of analogies of TikTok, right? They don't give a shit.
Right.
So with dogs, they're just very physical. So yes, you can use the prong, but I want you to start reestablishing your relationship by doing these very basic principle of thresholds. So it would be, get creative, do whatever you want, but it would be going up to the door, whatever door it is, and typically the dog is conditioned to go, we're going through when it's opened, and you say stay, or you say sit. Mm-hmm. You open the door, you shut it. If they do well, pay the dog. If they don't, so the dog is going to start looking at you for direction. Great. Mm-hmm. The dog is going to start asking for permission. Can I go yet? Great. The dog is going to start knowing that you're taking things seriously, that they have to respect you, that they have to listen to you, that they can't just do what they want. If there's a person there, they want to lunge. No. I told you to down, right? So these are things in the mind that don't exist for the dog. If they want something, like you said, prior to our conversation, even if it's, let's say you're eating dinner with your family and something drops on the ground and the dog runs up and you say no, they go, yeah, right. Boom, steak, gone, right? So my point is that pattern in the dog's brain and the way that they process information and think doesn't, like, you don't have the ability to stop if it's high reward, if you will. Okay. So then copy and paste to, I don't really like this person. Well, yeah, you got no shot because, you know, you can't do it at a very small level, right? So if they want to lunge, you don't have a say.
Right.
Very rarely can somebody be, you know, have their dog off leash frolicking and running around and you say down and they drop. Very rarely can somebody do that but not tell their dog to down and stay when you open the door. I mean, if you have one, you can have the other. So when you tell your dog to down and stay and you want to show the pet sitter something on the phone, he may get suspicious and go, what are you doing, Mom? That's a stranger.
Right.
But they're not going to move because you're down, right? So you see how this all correlates?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll give you just three basic things that I love. The door is great. Do it with multiple doors. I would also be doing it with high rewards. So whatever your dog loves, food, toys, balls, anything that you can basically just say stay, sit, or whatever, and just start hucking these things, and they're urgent, and they're like, oh, and they're looking at you, and you go, okay, break. So the break. So those are the things, and then the break command you should establish. Do you have that?
We do free.
Perfect. So just make sure that the dog is to accomplish the behavior until you free the dog. That's huge. Okay. So just make sure that is going on, because that'll put you first. Right now, your dog's first. Okay. Your dog makes the rules. Mm-hmm. If the dog wants something, they go. Now, to give you context again, it's just when you, it's not like we're not creating a robot here. We're just saying, place, down, stay. I'm going to go whatever. Obviously not everywhere, but so once you start that, for an example, okay, let's say I said, okay, I want you to work on the place and the down and the stay. Do you have a place?
I have a place bed. He has not been trained on place. He lays on the couch. That's his main like place. And I tell him to hop up, and that's
okay. I would start doing.
Like, he doesn't stay.
I wouldn't. Yeah, don't. That's irrelevant to me. Start doing the place and the stay. You need him away from you, not next to you.
Okay.
Okay. Because the more you push him away, hey man, get away from me. Go figure life out on your own. Because you could have this, again, if it's not maybe protectiveness, and it could be this codependency thing where he needs to be with you and he needs to do this, and the other person's stealing. So sending your dog to, like, having a good place and stay is my favorite thing to teach. Like, it's my first thing I teach my dogs, because it's the most thing, it's the thing I use the most. But think about this. Your place is great. Your stay is good. Your obedience is excellent. You're advancing and maybe using the remote collar, and now you have advanced off-leash technology at your fingertips. You're crushing it. The new pet sitter comes in. Stay. Come on in. Good stay. And you do your, you can walk the pet sitter through the whole house, and you're, and he's just sitting there. Staying, yeah. Right?
Wow.
Doesn't matter how he feels. Of course, we want him to be joyous and be friendly, but it doesn't matter because he's there. So it pushes him away. Now, he will, because of his relationship with you, he's going to want to jump down this person's back, because he's like, she can't handle anything. Get out of here, guy or girl, whatever. Yeah. So that is obtainable for you, but you're thinking in your head, my dog would never not go after somebody. And I'm thinking in my head, if you had really good obedience, your dog shouldn't move. Right? So it's kind of a loophole. But two things. That doesn't mean that when you say break, he's not going to run up and scare the crap out of this person. It also doesn't mean that they're friends, and it also doesn't mean that they can't approach. I'm just saying, let's say your kid had another friend over, or anything. Like, the ability to just, again, like I did it today with my, he's, I don't call him a puppy anymore, but he's my 11-month-old dog. He's running around playing with my other dog, and I just just practicing. I just downed him. Boom, he's down. Good, and I'm playing fetch. So not only am I downing him off leash during play, I'm playing with the same dog in front of him that he was chasing my other dog during frisbee, and he's still downing. So my point is this. Yeah. Here's my point: is if you can get half of that, like let's say, because if you have a dog that's a little sketchy, let's say. Sure, you could treat it like a loaded gun. But let's say you had the ultimate control and something like, oh, I didn't know you had friends over, or I didn't know you were coming over, or I didn't, down, boom. Like, it's just, like, it's not just down, it's everything. Like, if you can reach out and ask your dog to do stuff regardless of the circumstances at any point in time, anybody's life would be, it doesn't matter if you have a therapy dog, like, everybody's life is better. So, I would be heavily working on the place, the stay, your those two things. And to give you context, the place for me is I don't imply like a down or a sit. I will manually do it. So for me, it'll be place, down, stay. So kind of like three behaviors. So just, okay. Just so you know. So you do whatever you want. And then I would be working on re-engineering your relationships with thresholds and making sure you're holding the dog accountable if he decides to flip you off and say, I don't care what you say, I'm doing what I want. Once you start holding him accountable and correcting him, he's going to look at you and go, whoa, my bad. And that will be huge. The other thing I was going to say is I would be really suggesting and starting to muzzle condition.
I had a great win. Good. We have a basket muzzle, and on Monday, he made it outside on a walk, kept his muzzle on it. He kind of reached up for it. I've been doing, you know, training him to put his nose in it for quite a while, and, you know, forever. And so he had it for the entire walk and left it alone once we got, you know, down one house or something. So
perfect.
He did great.
Perfect.
The trainer that came over here asked me to get like the Ray Allen like giant leather one, so I have that, but he's not trained on it yet.
Yeah, I think that's overkill. I think so. Here, if you were my client in front of me, it would be the muzzle would be a, and it is anyway, but it's a safety shield in case everything else goes wrong. It's like a safety. Right. And like, unless everything else goes wrong, like the muzzle is just there. So the muzzle that he's referring to is essentially like, if this dog is trying to maul somebody, he can't actually do it.
Right.
Where
right.
I think that if you're on top of things, like, again, like having the remote collar training would be huge, but you're not there yet. But like, imagine you putting your dog into a down, back tying the dog just in case, going over to show somebody. And this is all things. So your next step, your homework, is hiring a trainer. I don't know anything about this other trainer, so you go with your instinct on this. It doesn't matter to me.
Well, and that's one of my main questions, how to choose a trainer, what questions to ask. How do you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. It's tough to answer because everybody's different, right? Like, I got into dog training extremely naturally. It wasn't like, I'm going to be a dog trainer. I was like, I was 20 and I just started a dog walking company because I love dogs and I have an ability with them. And then I just got into it. So like, my style of training and teaching is not going to be super, like, you're not going to see it a lot out there. I mean, like, the way that I present information is going to be different than somebody else that would like be, I guess, clinically trained. So it's good, bad, you know, whatever. But I think when you're, okay, well, again, so with the trainer that you're talking about, you should be asking these questions. Well, why do we want a heavier duty muzzle? Well, because we don't want anybody to get hurt. It's like, yeah, but my dog is actually, and again, I'm just giving context of like what I've heard. Well, is, go ahead.
Well, so one thing that he said, so I emailed him, you know, that this great success that I had with the basket muzzle, and I was super excited. And so then I emailed him and I'm like, okay, what do we do next? And he was like, I want him to be able to be in the heavy duty muzzle for 2 hours before we can start. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of disappointing.
Well,
I was like, okay.
Okay.
I mean, I get it.
Right. Okay.
Safety wise. But
it's safety, but it's also just like, it's a lot of things, but it's experience, it's confidence. I would take this dog right now and walk away and be, but I'm different. And I'm not saying I'm better, because it may make me actually stupid and crazier. It just means like my comfortability with these dogs and my experience, knowing that this type of dog and the way that they're reacting, just by, I don't even know what this dog looks like, just by hearing you talk about this dog, I would bet there's a 97% chance that if you handed me the leash and he reacted towards me a couple times and I walked 10 feet down the road away from you, he wouldn't have a problem with me ever again as long as I was away from you. Once I got close 100%. To you, once I got close to you, or once I got close to the house, then I would be more cautious. I would be more careful, absolutely. But again, to answer your question of like, why would this person suggest this? It's likely because they're afraid of the dog and they do not want to get bit. Mm-hmm. And I do not blame them. It's just, I'm probably stupidly comfortable with dogs trying to hurt me, right? But I'm very natural at reading the situation and knowing when to protect myself and actually looking at a dog like likely this and being like, this dog is just terrified. You walk away, mom. Right. You give me the dog and I'm going to go do some obedience and see what's going on. And if I can sit there and pet your dog on the back or stroke your dog or touch your dog and the dog doesn't react and is just staring at me, doesn't mean we're friends, but it means that your dog has no problem with me. Your dog has a problem with me, with you. So mm-hmm. we have to start working on you. So then I go, okay, I need you to grab the leash. I need to see your handling. I need to. So you mentioned coming to my seminar. My out-of-state program would be fantastic for you as well if you're considering traveling and doing that, okay. Because that's where I would be able to do all of these things. I'd be able to watch you for 2 days and tell you every single thing that you're doing, and you'd also see me handle the dog. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as you need to feel comfortable, and I think that that's important too. And it's also just like assessing, again, like, okay, it's preference, right? And it's style. A dog like this, if you told me, and which you are consulting with me, I would never take a sleeve up and go, I'm going to see if this dog bites me. I would be like, this dog's terrified. Let me see the leash. I'm going to walk away. So here's how I gauge this. If the dog is actively lunging at me and lunging at me and lunging at me and lunging at me and trying to hurt me for more than 2 minutes, I would say, okay, yeah, this dog is aggressive towards people. we need to reevaluate. If I take the leash from you and the dog tries to run away from me towards you and then doesn't love to come with me but comes with me without trying to hurt me or react towards me or even bark at me or lunge at me, I would be like, this dog has no aggression at all. So I don't need to approach the dog and say, will you bite? Can I back you up into a corner and see if you'll react? Of course, because that's why you're here. And then on top of that, you know, again, I will not work with you until you make sure the dog can't bite me. These are all safety precautions that I think most dog trainers would need to have before moving forward, which is totally normal. I'm not normal.
Right.
But I also, and I've seen military dog handlers and trainers, master kennel trainers that have worked with dogs for longer than I've been alive, take more precautions than me because they aren't as comfortable, right? It's their job. Okay. This is my life, right? There's a difference between this becoming, you know, my comfort craft than anything else. So it's just different. So when you're looking for a trainer, you should be asking these questions of why. So when they say, oh, I want a bigger, better, thicker muzzle, why? Well, because I know that your dog might hurt me. Okay. But considering what you've seen so far and considering that my dog's never attacked anybody, has been nipping people, I think the Baskerville would be fine. Me taking another 2 weeks to introduce this muzzle that may not work is wasting valuable time, in my opinion. And they might say, well, then find somebody else. And then you do. So it's kind of like dating. Like, you know, yeah. You just find something that's like, you might have a couple things that you don't get and you don't necessarily like, but it's not a make or break thing. But then you might find something that you're like, this is, I can't roll this over. Like, this doesn't make any sense. So when you're asking these questions from a dog trainer, it would be, what's your experience working with aggressive dogs? What's your game plan when you come? Like, I have a dog that's going to be reactive towards you with me. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. How are you going to handle it? You know, things like that I think are important. And I'm not saying that this trainer is not the right fit, because they might be, but this is something that, like, me and my staff do in our sleep, and it's like we would have already grabbed the dog and went off to the other side of the room and been talking to you.
So if he's like, when he was charging, since that's in the house, like, would you take a dog that's charging at you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I do it all the time. I posted a video of it the other day when I was in Nashville doing my seminar. This German Shepherd just kept, so the only way to really defend yourself from a dog that's actively trying to hurt you and coming at your legs, coming at your chest, is to kind of choke them out. Like, you have to hold them out so they can't get to you. And it's not only till they can't get to you, you're trying to protect yourself. Like, that's the only way, because you have a leash, you have a piece of string attached to the dog. So mechanically, in physics, the only way you can stop the moving force from coming with you is to go up. And I don't like doing that. I've done it so many times, and I used to do it a lot, but then I realized that's very conflicting to the dog. I just use barriers. So in this video, you can see it on my Instagram. It's the dog comes at me, and I just use a cot, and I stop the dog, and I just block him. I don't say anything. I don't correct the dog. I don't do anything. I'm just reading the dog to see how serious they are and to see how bad they want to get to me. And, you know, if I block them once or twice and they're like, okay, I'm over it, like, what their intentions are. So my point is would I take the dog? Yes, absolutely. But I would keep maybe a barrier or a little cot in between us in the preliminary stages of the handoff. I've also not used cots. I've done that a bunch of times with really big mastiffs that, you know, aren't fun to battle. But I knew that as soon as I got 2 feet away from the owner, the dog's like, yeah, whatever. So again, it's like,
and that's what I think. I think he would do that. Like, if you had him right by his lead, you may have to choke him out. Like you said, like, you'd have to keep him away from you. And then I think he would be like, oh
yeah. But okay. Also too, like, here's something to consider. He's never been punished for reacting from you.
True.
So think about that. So think about this. Tom, my dog is doing something I don't want and I want to correct, but I've never corrected it.
Right.
Well, okay. How are they going
to
know?
Welcome to
wrong?
Parenting,
Yeah, exactly. I talk about that all the time. It's like, how do they know it's wrong if you aren't correcting it? Or why would they stop doing it if it's not, like, if you're not abruptly making it uncomfortable for them to do it? Because then there becomes this conversation of, if you have a dog that just doesn't like people, the only option you do have, you can't counter condition, you can't desensitize, you can't, they don't like people. They're going to want to hurt. They're like, I'm hurting this person now. And if you don't manage it and not get around people, which isn't realistic, but if you don't correct it and make it uncomfortable for them to do it, you have no other option. So you correct it, and it's a form of suppression, which suppression in dog training happens every day. You put a leash on a dog, you're suppressing a dog. They want to run around your neighborhood with their head cut off, but you say, no, you can't. You have to stay with me, right? So anyway, so I think it's just important to kind of go through your options. I think you should get a trainer, and you can use the trainer you have. I don't know anything about them or what their experience is, but I think if you feel like the person is afraid of your dog, it's going to be hard for you to make, because they're going to overcorrect the dog. They're going to be really jittery around the dog, and they're going to be, and that's not going to help, I don't think. So I think
know that you train trainers. Do you have a network of people that would be
where are
around
you?
In the area? I'm in the Austin, Texas area.
I don't, off the top of my head, I honestly could recommend like 5 people maybe that I know of in the world, you know, only because I've like break bread with them and I know them, and I've, you know, because people can, I've seen people that are like look good online and you go and hang out with them for a day and they're awful, and that's life, like with anything, right? And rabbit hole. Anyway, no, I don't know anybody in the Austin area, but again, like, you know, you're in a big city, there's 100% going to be somebody there that can help you with what you're dealing with. You just don't want to just interview people, and until then, do the things that I said and start working on that, because you're automatically going to start setting yourself up for success. And when the trainer comes in, it's going to be an easier transition because you've already consulted with me and what you want to do. I've done it 1,000 times. I know that it's going to work for you, and you're doing all the wrong things. And so now that you have a pocket full of things on how to do it right, you're automatically, as long as you do it, are in a better spot. Like, think about it. Like, take one of the things that you were not doing right is going to change. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, Tom, my dog's gone after 5 people. Have you ever told the dog no and they did it? No. Okay, let's start there. Like, things like that. That comes with thresholds, right? You put your dog in it. Okay, Tom, I worked on place and stay. I have the prong collar on. I have the leash on. We worked on it all week. We know the expectations. The dog's eager to work. We're good. Let's invite somebody new over. The dog lunges. We correct the dog. The dog finally gets corrected and punished and held accountable for A, breaking the place, but B, going after somebody. We don't want that to happen. We're discouraging that from happening. We're making that action uncomfortable so they don't want to do it again. They're not going to look at the person and go, oh, you caused the discomfort. No, you jumping off the place and lunging at somebody caused the discomfort, because the person's still standing right there and nothing is happening to you. You're good. It's the action that caused that.
Okay.
Okay. It's nice to meet you. I think you'll be fine. If you're not, let me know, because this is really easy.
Okay.
It's a really easy, it's not, you know, what makes it easy is it's not a really, all the things you're dealing with makes perfect sense. Everything. The reason why it's happening makes perfect sense. And the reason why the dog is doing it makes perfect sense. I'm not scratching my head at all, which means this is a really easy solution for somebody that knows what they're doing to get in there and help you. Easy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, because it's, for one, it's given me the tools to talk to my family better too. And so
yeah, just tell them,
not
I'm doing
pressuring
all
me and
yeah, just yeah, tell them, just say
I'm doing the things.
I'm doing all the things, and before I wasn't, so it's my fault. Yeah. You know, my dog was reacting towards people and I never told my dog no, so here we are. Okay. Yeah. Nice to meet you. Have
Thank
fun.
You.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Good luck.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
88% of the work week is spent communicating. typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.